Welcome to Framework of Field.
Framework is a show consecrated to field recording and its use in composition. Field recording, phonography, the art of sound hunting. Open your ears and listen. Framework Afield is a series of special editions curated and produced by guest artists from around the world. A new edition airs every second week, alternating with our usual Framework broadcasts. For more information, see our website at www.frameworkradio.net. This edition has been produced in the UK by Bill Thompson in collaboration with Maike van der Linde and Dr. Jörg T. Albert. For more information, see www.billthompson.org.
If the second one has reached the framework, the first framework, then the...
You can, for example, read the first line, and then I can do the second one.
Or no, when I reach framework, then you start. And when you reach framework, then Bill starts.
That's it.
Then we have basically like, not too much apart.
It's like a canon, yeah.
But just a three word basically. So who starts, you start.
Okay, but in English.
And then I'm going second.
I would say exactly, because otherwise, exactly, you go second. And when she reaches framework the first time, then you start reading the whole text. When you reach framework, I start reading.
Okay.
Are we doing different languages? Are you going to do it?
I think it's nicer if we do
for
it in the
canon,
same language.
For canon, it's nicer if it's all English.
Okay, that's
fine. We can do it four times and take the best.
I mean, I couldn't do it in Spanish. Not really. Okay, go ahead.
Take one. Welcome to Framework.
Framework is a show consecrated to field recording and its use in composition, field recording, phonography, the art of sound hunting.
And listen.
Open your ears and listen.
We're supposed to record a minute.
Oh, yeah.
with this text or what?
No, like...
I can read very slowly.
A minute before and then...
I can copy paste in the minute?
No, because it's got to be a continuous thing. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well, how are we going to know if it's been a minute? This is a very serious recording.
Where's
absolutely.
Do you have a watch?
Yeah, of course you can have a watch.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. You can even have a real stopwatch here.
Wow, okay.
I like the analog.
Yes, please. Okay. I want to do
this. I remember watches.
So why don't you start then? Because you can see.
There we go.
I can start.
Okay, let it go for a minute. Ready? Starting the minute now.
Welcome to Framework. Framework is a show consecrated to field recording and its use in composition, field recording, phonography, the art of sound hunting.
Open your ears and listen. Thank you.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Thompson, sound artist, and I am sitting here. Where am I sitting, actually?
You are sitting directly in a glass office in the UCL Ear Institute. It doesn't get better than this.
No, it's very nice. To my left, who you just heard, is Jörg Albert, who's the senior lecturer at the UCL Ear Institute. And to my right, I have Maaike van der Linde, who I've just completely butchered your name. How do you say it?
Maaike van der Linde.
Yeah, who's a sound artist. And they have been working on a really interesting project with fruit flies, and I've just joined them for this project recently, and I thought it would make a really good framework. So I guess we should just start talking about actually what you're doing. So how did you get involved in this? How did you discover fruit flies? And
yeah, I guess it's good to talk about how it all started, because it all started with my flatmate Peter, who is a PhD student at the UCL and doing research on fruit flies as well, just like Jörg. And I thought it was really fascinating that he was so focusing on just such a little thing like a fruit fly. So I was always talking with him about it. And then Peter put me into contact with Jörg. And I think it was like 6 months ago that I went here for the first time, and you just spoke to me for 2 hours.
Sounds about right. That's what
yes.
I do. So usually people don't return after that.
Right? So you called Jörg up and said, "Hey, my flatmates told me about fruit flies. Can I just pop in?"
Yes, because I started reading about it myself, and then first I was interested, and still I'm interested in the fruit fly as a whole. But then I discovered something about that they sing courtship songs, and Peter told me that Jörg knows all about it. So I emailed Jörg like, "Hey, would you like to tell me a little bit more about it?"
You thought another nutter has contacted me about these fruit flies.
Well, that's what Jörg loves, telling a little bit more about it.
So tell us, what's your role here? How did you get involved with this? And
well, how I came to the project is already described by Maaike. It's her writing an email and coming and seeing me, and basically it was a refreshing new approach to what I was doing anyway, mm-hmm. and a completely new look on it. But how did I get involved with a fruit fly? That's a different story. Just about 7 or 8 years ago, I would have still ridiculed the people working with fruit flies, because I was trained as a zoologist. Trying to capture the whole width of the animal kingdom and seeing himself as an evolutionary biologist in the footsteps of Darwin, slightly boring doing what Darwin has done already and not being able to do it better. And then I somehow lost track and got into neuroscience, and neuroscience to me didn't have to do with this model organism that everybody seemed to be so obsessed about, but again had to do with real animals that behave in a capturing way, like spiders, for example. I was looking into spiders and the tactile sense of spiders, because what I'm interested in ever since I think I started and continued my studies is the world of mechanosensation. So how we perceive with our mechanical senses, the senses of touch, the sense of gravity, the sense of sound. And all these senses on the molecular level are very much the same. So on the level of the sheath of a cell, of a membrane, these senses are identical, basically. And we don't know anything almost about the molecular apparatuses that form the basis of our sensation for wind, gravity, hearing. And so I wanted to help deciphering the molecular enigma and puzzles that are still around these sensations, and that inevitably brought me to Drosophila, because Drosophila is one of these, or the fruit fly, is one of these organisms that are genetically so tractable and manipulable that it's a penalty on not studying it if you're interested in molecules.
Thank you.
one of these areas of behavior that has been the subject of research, intensive research, for, I would say, almost 70 years, is the fruit fly courtship song. It's the fact that fruit flies sing these incredibly faint, virtually inaudible sounds to each other. This is just a means for us to have a readout if certain genetic strategies do work. So do we, by introducing a certain mutation into the animals, do we really impair their sense of hearing? In order to test that, we have to have some kind of behavior that tests for their hearing. And what we do is basically we play songs to the males, and the males, for whatever reason, respond to these songs by forming long chains and walking around like for a dance. And if they don't form these chains, we know they don't hear the song properly anymore.
It's like line dancing.
It's like line dancing, yes.
to put it in Texas terms.
It looks very cheerful, actually.
Yeah.
But they're cute animals in the end, so
yeah.
I think they do.
Yeah, I thought these flies were the bisexual species, right?
What does bisexual mean?
Because they try to follow each other.
Oh.
So they sing the courtship song for another male.
I see. So it is not clear what is the context of the males doing that. And if you say bisexual, you would imply that the sexual content of this behavior is directed against the same sex. That's not clear. It could well be that they are just one male listening to another male singing, is following that male, because usually that singing is addressed to a female.
Oh, so
by following the male, they might be eavesdropping on another male courting and just trying to win the game.
Gay crash the party.
Exactly, gay crash the party.
Yes.
Just in time for copulation, basically. No investment before, but just being there in time. Because what is the effect of the song of the male singing to the female? The effect, that's what we think, is that it reduces the speed with which the female escapes the male. So if you are in the wild, and the wild already begins in the petri dish,
mm-hmm.
so you have two animals of opposite opposing sex, the male and the female in the petri dish, and the male is singing to the female is running away from the male. And the better the male sings, the slower she runs away,
mm-hmm.
eventually standing still and admitting the male for copulation.
Okay.
So that's the effect of a good song.
Okay.
And that's already the context of the song. It has to do with reproduction, it has to do with copulation. Thank you.
turn to you, Micah. How are you using these food flights? Because you're a sound artist and a musician.
Yes.
So obviously your process and what you're doing with this has a very different focus, even though your interest meets your at an interesting juncture.
Definitely. You know, it has been a journey because I think when I started this project, I was, I mean, Jurgen's talking on a, you know, molecular level. So it's like, for me, it's like I thought, hey, that's interesting. A fruit fly, it's so tiny. I want to know more about it. And then when Jurg told me about the courtship song, so the male fly basically singing song by vibrating one of his wings, because if he would use two wings, he would take flight, which is not very helpful in the situation. So I thought it's just a very beautiful detail. And then when Jurg told me that there are over more than, I think you said 2,000 species or something, and they all have their own unique courtship song. That just triggered, you know, because I've been traveling, last 2 years I've been traveling quite a lot to learn more about folk music. So I went to Argentina, I went to Palestine, I went to the Gambia, just to learn about music of the world. And then to realize that this is actually happening on it's happening all the time and on so many levels, also in the insect world, just with fruit flies, they have their own folk music, basically. They sing love songs in order to attract the female. And also the essential role of the sound, because the courtship song is built up with different rhythmical patterns, and based on these patterns, the female fly decides, right, if this guy is one of her species. So she is basically saying like yes or no based on the sound. So it's so essential for the whole evolution of this species that just it became more deep and more deep and more deep. And then recently when we were started talking about the laser microphone, it became almost a more philosophical subject, because I think it's the whole diversity in the world is something that is like it's hard to conceptualize. First of all, it's like something, it's mind-blowing, it's overwhelming for me as an artist, as a flautist. But it's also the perception of sound being so diverse. So we all have ears, and they all look different, but they also work different. So it's the same as a discussion of color. Like, we can talk about blue, but how do I know that if we talk about blue that you see the same blue as I do? Mm-hmm. We will never know, because we will always use the same word. It might be the same for sound as well. So it's just, it's overwhelming and it's very beautiful. It's also a bit frightening, I think, for me. It's like, it's so hard to conceptualize too.
It's very hard for artists to work with this type of material and to do it in a way that's tasteful. Because I find these sounds to be actually quite beautiful. And you want to, for me, I'd like to frame it in a way that highlights that without being too, without selling.
Exactly, because that's something I because I've been thinking so much about it and listening to it so much. And then there's an obvious thing that you could do is taking the pulse patterns, for example, and process them or use them as you could use them as an inspirational tool for composing. But you want to do it in a way that it's tasteful.
It kind of honors the sound.
Yes, you want to be true to the sound, because it's so beautiful the way it is. Because that's basically what I want to do as an artist, is that I just want to put a circle around it, right? I just want to focus people's attention, like, hey guys, listen, there's so much going on. There's so many beautiful little sounds, because that's something that I've been interested more and more over the years. I studied classical music, and then since 2 years when I moved to London, then I became really interested in improvisation and learned so much more about different scales and different sounds on the flute. And I became really interested in that. And then last year I did a project I was working with field recordings on cassette tape and treating them with chemicals in order to see what would happen to the, you know, to the recordings. Would it change? Just experimenting. So this whole hidden sound world, and it's so, once you go into the hidden sound world of the fruit flies, you discover that there's a whole universe. And it means so much. And then recently somebody forwarded me an article about frogs. I was like, no, I can't take it. It's just now I'm bursting. Fruit flies at the moment, yeah. But I guess that's like, it's just something that I want to communicate in my work. Like, just open people's ears. Like, listen, this is, there's so much music happening on this level. It's so important. It's always around us. Thank you.
So how do you record these sounds? How do you capture them?
It is acoustically, it's a reasonably challenging task to record these songs, not mainly because they are so faint, because we could simply use high amplification strategies, but also because of their frequency range, mm-hmm. and because of their physical structure. Sound can be distinguished in a chorus. First distinction can be decomposed in two components. The one is the pressure component that we usually record with our microphones, mm-hmm. because also our ears are pressure sensitive devices. So we implement with our technological devices, the microphones and hearing aids, the functioning of our natural ears. Pressure is a sound force acting on a membrane. This mm-hmm. membrane can be the tympanic membrane in our ears, the eardrum, and it can be the microphone membrane. And we measure the pressure, and one of our ways of assessing the intensity of a sound is to measure it as sound pressure level. Mm. But there's a different component, given the physical construction of sound, and that is the velocity. So you can have a pressure, you can measure sound energy as a pressure component, but you can also measure it as a velocity component. Mm-hmm. Because what is sound? A sound is a mechanical disturbance that propagates through a medium. And this medium can be the air. This medium can be a liquid, like seawater. This medium also can be a surface of a table. If we tap on a table, the sound does not propagate, if we're sitting on the other end of the table, only through the air, mm-hmm. but much faster through the table itself. Mm-hmm. And it can be, this table can be our bones. Mm-hmm. We're hearing with our bones as well. Even if our ears are completely deafened by an infection or by some more serious condition, we still are able to hear something which is propagated through the actual inner ear by our bones. And these mechanical disturbances can be decomposed in different functional units. The one is pressure, the other one is velocity. So the air particles, for example, are really moving. Mm-hmm. They're not standing still. They're moving because they're driven first by thermal noise. Because everything above the absolute point of zero is moving, and if we introduce a certain oscillation into this medium, the air, then the air particles will oscillate. They'll move back and forth, and this can cause, if acting on a membrane, can cause a pressure, but you can also measure it as the velocity of the particles. The problem is now that the pressure continues propagating very, very far. Mm-hmm. The velocity decays very soon.
Okay.
So if you would want to measure velocities, you should be very close to the sound source, or as the acoustics researchers would say, in the near field of the sound. And that's what flies do. They only sing and hear in the near field. So they're very close to each other, where the velocity component, so the actual movement of the air particles, is still very big as compared to the pressure. So they can afford to use this near field, near range sound parameter in order to hear. So what they do is they have a very soft structure, like the antenna, and this is moved around by the air particles, and this movement of the sound receiver, the antenna, is being measured.
So they're velocity sensitive.
They're velocity sensitive.
And is that because is it more efficient? Is that why?
I don't
less expensive
think,
in mechanical terms.
I don't think it's more efficient. I would even say it's less efficient. And I think asking that question and being puzzled perhaps by the answer why an organism should choose
that
is most likely less efficient and less optimal, no engineer would have designed that this way, already bears and carries the answer in itself, because life and solutions on this planet have not been provided by engineers. Mm. They have been provided by a contingent process that we call evolution. Mm. So they have always to work with what they had before they have to work with. And flies sing with their wings. Why do they choose their wings? Wings are, not only is the near field of a sound and the velocity component not an ideal component to measure if you want to communicate acoustically, also the wing is a very bad sound radiator. Mm. So there's imperfections all over the place. But it may have to do with the evolutionary path that has led to the innovation of singing fruit flies. Mosquitoes, who are reasonably close relatives of fruit flies, sing with their wings during flight. And that might be, for example, the original condition, that many insects like dragonflies or mosquitoes can copulate in the air. Mm-hmm. So they form copula. So it's an amazing acrobatic act. So males and females copulate while flying. They don't fall out of the air. And in order not to fall out of the air, that would be my speculation, they have to somehow arrange their wing beats to each other. Otherwise, they would cause turbulences.
Yeah.
So they have to somehow harmonically adjust their mutual wing beats. And they measure their own wing beats with their antennae. So here we have everything in place that could form when staying on the ground, the senders and receivers for acoustic communication. You're able to cause a mechanical disturbance that can propagate through a medium, so you satisfy the definition of sound. You can measure this with your antennae that are actually flight controlling organs, and you create the sound with the wings that actually are there to keep you in the air and provide aerodynamic lift. So I think the evolutionary path to singing insects has something to do with their mode of locomotion. It's right. Just a spin-off of the way they live. we can try to divide this field of singing fruit flies into two different aspects. The one is, what are the different song elements that are contained in the fruit fly, in the songs of most fruit flies? Or what is the differences between different singing fruit flies? And the if we would start with the very first one, to say, what are the song elements that occur frequently in fruit fly songs? You can divide them into two components. The one is almost like a very simple, almost technical sine wave. It's a humming song. It sounds like somebody humming. And the other one is the pulse song.
Okay.
And the pulse song is evolutionarily considered to be the more important one. This is only to cover the fact that actually we have no idea what the sine song really is for. But many species do it. And it may have to do with the fact that it's closest to the actual wing beat during flight. So let's have listen into these two components. We start with a pulse song, and we record this with a special microphone. You asked before how do we record these songs. What we do use in order to get the velocity component is we use pressure gradient microphones, because a velocity is proportional to the gradient between two pressures. And if we have two membranes, the one measuring the pressure here, the other one measuring the pressure there, then the output of the microphone is proportional to the velocity. So what we get basically is a profile of the velocity.
So and which species is this?
This is the commonly used fruit fly species, Drosophila melanogaster. This is the one that we, in 99% of all times, use for our experiments, because we've got all the tools for these flies.
This is a scientist's baby.
Exactly. It's been described as the geneticist's darling of geneticists, and everybody's darling in the field of evolutionary biology. So we use our microphone first in order to listen to the pulse song of the fruit fly. We were listening to the two canonical components of a fruit fly song. The first one was the pulse song. So what the flies are doing is they create very short, rather regular waveforms that look like cut out of one sinusoidal wave. It's just like one cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a pause in between, and they have one other cycle. So they only have little mini pulses. They have been described as pulses. Technically, they are not pulses, but they have been described as pulses. And the way they do this is by starting wing beat and then immediately stopping it, so that you have only one oscillation, one flapping, one up and one down stroke of the wing. And then they wait a certain time. The time they wait is the important part in the communication, because different species wait different times until they repeat the next pulse.
No, I was really tempted to clean the noise out of that sample, but you were saying that there's a reason why not to do that beyond.
I can fully see why you're tempted to do that, because if you're listening to that sound, it's a highly polluted, noise polluted signal that doesn't seem to satisfy our expectations and our technical ambition. And the flies, I think, would fully support that. They also would like to filter that out.
Right.
And just like you have found ways of doing that with your filtering, they have found ways of not listening to the high frequency components of the sound that they're actually not interested in. And their whole ear, just like our own ear, could be described as an incredibly intelligent, non-linear, active filter.
Mm.
And what does non-linear and what does active mean? Both the human ear and the Drosophila ear amplifies sound. So they're not only filtering it out, because filtering doesn't give you any energy, any amplification. It's just like forgetting things. You don't hear certain frequencies, but that reduces your response to a certain frequency band, but doesn't amplify the response to the frequency band you're interested in. But what ears usually do is, in that range of frequencies, they amplify sound. And they do this most likely, at least in parts, by a very similar process. So And this is basically why I'm studying these flies, which is at first sight a rather outlandish activity to look at fruit fly songs. Even for an entomologist, I think it would be an outlandish thing to do, but I'm not considering myself an entomologist in the first place. I'm interested in the molecular underpinnings of behavior. And the way they amplify and we amplify sound has to do with the very cells that sense sound for the first time. In our case, our cochlea, which is our hearing organ, is equipped with a certain epithelium of sensory cells that is called hair cells. Mm-hmm. These hair cells have hair-like structures which are wobbled around by sound, and this wobbling around is transmitting forces to certain molecules in the membrane of these cells, so-called transducer channels. And what these transducer channels do is they take the external energy and the movement of this induced by sound and convert it into an electrical event. So they open and close a gate, and when they open the gate, ions and charged particles flow through it. So they make a transduction between a mechanical and an electrical event, for which reason they are called mechano-electrical transducers, which is the same that a microphone does.
Right.
The microphone converts a mechanical event into an electrical event. But we try to reach linearity in most microphones because we don't want them to do the filtering part. We want to do the filtering part later. But these transducer modules, these transducer channels, can not only transduce and convert sound into electrical energy, they can, by being associated with accessory proteins like motor proteins, which inject energy into the process, actively enhance the sound-induced motion. So something comes in, opens the ion channel, and that causes a feedback process that makes the ion channel move more.
Right.
And if you tune these different things, so the incoming sound and the frequency preferences of this molecular machinery in the right way, you end up with amplification. So your actual motion of your ion channel is much, much, much greater than it would be without these amplifying motor proteins.
And so, I mean, I know that we do that because I think physically our cochlea is in a shape that amplifies the speech range.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you were saying that flies do that as well, the fruit flies. But how did you know? Because you have a recording that somehow you've isolated the sound that the female would hear.
We try to
explain that.
It's difficult to sneak into the sensory world of
yeah,
already
exactly.
Our yours already. I have no idea how to get into your brain or ear. But
you don't want to.
It's an ugly world in there. Ugly world.
but nor have I any idea how to do this with a fruit fly. Even less so, most likely, I must say in your favor. It's a feeling of sympathy.
Yeah. Thank you. Cheers.
Although I like fruit flies as well. But what we try to do for this reason is to get an idea how a fruit fly would hear its own courtship song.
Mm-hmm.
What we did is we took a rather expensive device, a so-called laser Doppler vibrometer, which is, it looks as unpretentious as a slide projector from the 80s, but is a highly sophisticated device that shines a laser light on the sound receiver of the flies, and is thereby possible, enabled to measure the position of that sound receiver. So when sound comes in, the sound receiver will move, and the laser Doppler vibrometer will be able to monitor and measure this motion, so we can directly see how does sound excite the female's ear.
Mm.
And if we compare the two, so measured, we let the male sing a song, measure it with our best microphone,
mm-hmm.
and then we compare it to the female ear. And we immediately see that the component measured with the technical microphone contains all this noise that you wanted to filter out.
Yeah, the example we just heard. So let's listen to this. You've got another example.
I've got another
process.
Example. Just
let's play
to
that.
Illustrate.
Let's play that. What we were hearing is actually we're hearing the frequency, the filtering that the female fruit fly's hearing apparatus results in.
We're
so
hearing basically the
noise.
Actual input into the fly.
Right, okay.
So the sound in the world
yeah.
is at the first stage filtered in our ears, at the very periphery. Afterwards, our brains
yeah.
do a lot of subsequent filtering, but the first filtering and the amplification steps are done by the ear itself.
Right.
And we hear basically, this is what we're hearing, basically. There's this first crucial filtering, preparing the sound for being processed by the brain of the respective species.
It's quite interesting because I know that Graham Bell, he wasn't the first one, but he was probably the most famous one to create an early microphone system out of a natural human being's cadaver's ear, and which is sort of like a very similar experiment, but this is actually much more advanced, obviously, using lasers.
It's similar, but if you're measuring one very important point that also has hampered or at least delayed our understanding and appreciation of the sophistication of natural and biological ears. You said cadaver.
Mm.
In a corpse, in a cadaver, these processes of amplification and nonlinear filtering are largely absent.
Because there's no actual, it's not active.
The activity has deceased. There's still some residual nonlinearity in the system, but not any amplification anymore. So all the performances that makes our ears so sophisticated and so functional stop, not only after death, but very often also after narcosis and as many possibilities, anoxia, if you don't have enough oxygen to sustain the process.
Mm.
And just to say, what is the difference between an ear that is void of this amplification mechanism and an intact ear? You have roughly 40 to 50 decibel difference in the perception of the sound just by means of this amplification machinery in our ears. In Drosophila, it is roughly 20 decibel.
Okay.
So it's a 10 times, 20 decibel would be equivalent to a 10 times amplification, 40 decibel to a 100 times amplification. So we massively amplify the sound.
Just mechanically.
But when we listen to a recording of that, you know, that you make with a laser microphone, so we listen to it, goes through a speaker or our headphones and into our ears, so we filter it again.
Of course.
So it's always a question, like, you might hear it different than I do.
I think sometimes when people talk about art and science meeting, sometimes they get the sense of how can it work when you have a very kind of rational point of view and a very kind of metaphorical, allegorical. But I see a lot of connections through all of this. Because when I first met you, we were on a residency and I had introduced transducers to the residency. And the next thing I knew is I was sitting in a cardboard box and you were playing Fruit Flies and this sound of shakuhachi through this box. That I was
sounds
sitting
like the pills didn't work.
It was fantastic. I mean, yeah, so much for my residency. But it was great because you heard it, but as you were saying, you physically felt it because
yes.
you were in contact with this box.
Absolutely.
So it crossed over the modalities and...
It has to do with translation.
Yeah, absolutely.
What science and arts do is translate things.
Yes.
And translate them into different languages and slightly transpose them to facilitate some sort of or arrange some sort of appreciation.
That's it.
Yes.
And the scientist does nothing different, of course. We have different purposes, no doubt about it. But it all has to do with reflecting and representing a certain way our world is constructed.
Yes.
And we have a certain insight, we realize something, and then we communicate that.
Yeah.
And we communicate this from a certain perspective, from a certain individual stance, so we filter the world.
That's it.
So scientists do that and artists do that.
Yeah.
And only, I think, bad scientists and bad artists don't do that.
Yeah.
And they have this stance of objectivity, neutrality, and they think, no, they just say as it is. There is no such thing. So when you said frogs, for example, before, yeah?
Yeah.
The whole world of acoustics is densely packed with eavesdropping of different species on each other.
Yeah.
And our sense of hearing is not only used for means of communication, just like during this interview, or like when eavesdropping on a Drosophila acoustic communication. We use this to orientate ourselves in the world. Yeah. When somebody speaks in a room and I close my eyes or I speak myself, I have an idea about the structure and the size of the room, because our three-dimensional space that we have in a map in our brain is created by the acoustic information we pick up. So we need the noise from the background to create our three-dimensional spaces. Once we are completely deafened, we have lots of problems to three-dimensionally find our way through the world.
Hmm.
So it's not only about
communication,
like, yeah, and you need all these other frequency bands. Our voices between whatever 300 hertz and 4 kilohertz. That's that. If you filter off anything above that, you don't lose much.
Mm.
Very, very few people hear the differences.
Yeah.
But we need also the upper, higher frequency ranges for other tasks that perhaps we don't even know about. Mosquitoes, for example, some of them feed on frogs. So the mosquitoes listen to the songs the frogs are singing, because frogs are mad singers. You hear them in every holiday. We hear them where they are in the toads. And mosquitoes eavesdrop on that and try to localize the frogs when they're singing, and so that they can penetrate their proboscis into their skin and blood feed them.
Yeah.
And like insects are listening out for bats in order not to be eaten. That's why insects most likely have developed a sense of ultrasonic hearing, because bats use ultrasound to localize the prey.
Yeah.
So everything is a densely interconnected web of acoustic communication that is partly voluntarily, it's deliberately meant to communicate something, and sometimes certain animals are just exploiting information available.
Yeah.
So there's much more about the acoustic world than we commonly appreciate.
Yes, but it's also like, for me personally, when I started this project, and when you start listening to these tiny sounds, it becomes almost some kind of mindful practice. So as soon as you start doing that, you also start listening to other sounds, and it's really satisfying to do that, and it's really it makes you think, like, for example, what living in a city like London does to you, because it has an effect on your body, and it's so.
Well, you become aware of your own filtering, don't you?
Yes, you become very aware,
yeah.
and sometimes you need to switch it off.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're too aware,
yeah.
Then it can be a little bit too much, but. Yes, and you become aware of the different layers of sound, so you are aware of, like, this hum that's always there in the city, different hums, the constant sounds going on all the time, and then little sounds that are closer to you that are more percussive and more staccato, and then these are things that I think for me as an artist, these are things that you can use as compositional tools and use them in your art project, and that's really
a listening practice.
Basically the fruit flies, I mean, this whole project is about fruit flies and about their songs, but it's also a metaphor for me of how I want to listen and how I want to approach sound in my practice.
Okay, well, that's all that we have time for today. So thank you very much, York.
Thank you very much, Bill.
And Micah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
And and I'm Bill Thompson. So. Hope you've enjoyed this edition of Framework, and hope to find you all here again soon.
You have been listening to Framework Afield. For more information, see our website at www.frameworkradio.net. Thanks for listening.